From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Wake up in the middle of the night, covered in sweat, waves of heat sweeps through your body. Sleep is impossible. Well, it's a hot flash, and it's menopause, and it's something that almost every woman who lives long enough will experience. But why is menopause talked about like it's a joke, if it's talked about at all? Why doesn't society take this collective life experience more seriously? Well, writer Darcy Steinke refuses to feel shame about her body's changes. After years of equating menopausal women with witches, shunning women's anger, and laughing at hot flashes on TV sitcoms, Steinke says it's time for all of us to treat menopause reverently, as the physical change it is and the spiritual transformation it could be. So this hour on Point, menopause as a vindication of life. And you can join us. What is your story with menopause? How did you, your mother, or your friends cope with the midlife changes? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And joining us today from New York is Darcy Steinke. She's author of the new book, Flash Count Diary, Menopause and the Vindication of Natural Life. We have an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. Darcy, welcome to On Point.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's really great to have you. So I wonder if you might just begin by sharing with us what your first experiences of menopause were like. And did you know it was happening?
Well, I had my first hot flash about 6 years ago. It was in the middle of the night. I woke up. I was covered with sweat. And I was almost like completely like incandescent with heat. Like I felt like there was hot coals inside of me. And I remember sitting up, and I'm a minister's daughter, you know, so I thought to myself, God is finally trying to contact me. You know, that was my first thought, you know. So over the next few days, I had more hot flashes, and I realized that I had entered menopause, you know, that I was having hot flashes. I was having sleeplessness. I found myself sort of wandering around my house in the middle of the night, sort of feeling like I was molting, you know, sort of feeling like a new, slightly more androgynous creature was sort of coming out of my former fertile body. So it was very disorienting for me. So that was the first experiences of it.
Well, I mean, the latter half of your description there makes it sound like it could potentially be a rejuvenating experience, or almost like a rebirth into a different kind of body.
Right. I mean, that is my feeling about it. I do feel like it's important to be honest about the struggle. I mean, there's, you know, it's not easy. There's a huge struggle, you know, connected to menopause. But also, my feeling is sort of outside of the cycle. I mean, I sort of knew myself by cycling. I knew when my hormones were higher, lower. And outside of the cycle, it's like there's a wide open field, you know, filled with wildflowers. You know what I mean? It's like, it's really amazing. I mean, I felt once I was outside of cycling that I had been very boxed in by cycling and hadn't really realized it. You know what I mean? So like, once I was on the other side of it, I felt a huge freedom, just chemically, which is sort of strange.
Wow. So that's interesting, because that's not really ever how I've heard menopause being spoken about, right? Because the whole idea of having this monthly cycle from the time a young woman first gets it, it's such a fundamental part of the experience of life for most women, that menopause is, I guess we collectively think of it as a loss, right? A loss of one of the things that defines us
as
women.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I think in our culture, which, you know, also just, you know, laid out there, it's a patriarchy, values women mostly for their sexuality and for their motherhood, for their mothering ability. So I think when menopause comes, you know, there is a sense, I mean, I think culturally, that we're losing something, that we're losing our fertile cells, you know, which is the most important, actually, part of our female cells, themselves. But I really want to push back against that. You know what I mean? I feel like you cycle and you're that fertile sexual. I mean, not that you aren't still sexual after menopause, because of course you are, but you're fertile for a shorter time than your childhood years and then your postmenopausal years, right? So, like, in some ways, that's a smaller part of your life. And I don't believe that it should be considered the main, you know, healthiest, most vital, actually, time of life. I feel like the menopausal years can be just as, if not more vital.
Yeah. So when you were going through this at the beginning of experiencing the hot flashes, I understand that you looked for guides, right? You looked for books to sort of help you through this transition. What did you find?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a writer. I'm a big reader, too. So I looked for books. I always look for books to help me, actually, whether it is childbirth or, you know, when my mother died, I remember looking for books about grief. And but I didn't find a lot of books that I liked about menopause. There were two that I liked. One is called The Change by Germaine Greer. The other is Colette, the French writer's book, Break of Day. That's a beautiful meditation on menopause. But I also found a lot of books that, I mean, even the ones that were memoirs that had some personal experience of struggle, they would usually end with the moment of hormone, you know, acceptance, of going on to hormones. And then the journey was kind of over, which I found unsatisfying. I mean, I chose not to go on hormones, partly because my mother had breast cancer. So, and then I found a lot of really terrible books that gave bad medical information. I mean, I'll just say books like The Sexy Years by Suzanne Somers. I mean, that has like...
Oh, dear. I mean, it's just, I don't mean to laugh. I'm sorry about that.
I mean, it's amazing that she's a spokesperson for menopause, but also like it has just like information that's wrong. You know what I mean? That's like medically wrong, you know? So I felt really frustrated. And during this time, I was looking for just something to sort of lead me out of this, you know, this sort of strange feeling of like a vacuum of information about the thing I was going through. And that's when I saw, like, in the Science Times, the New York Times on Tuesday, a little article about how the two creatures that go through menopause are female women and killer whales. So I went directly to the journal Nature, which had the full, you know, the full article, the full scientific article, and I read it. And it said that killer whales, you know, and the whales they study specifically are the southern residents who live in the Salish Sea, like in Washington State. They go through menopause at around 45 or 50, and then they go on to live for, you know, 30 to 50 more years, and they become the leaders of their pods. They become the post-reproductive pod leaders. They know where the salmon is when the salmon, you know, is scarce. They help with communication between the younger whales. I mean, they're leaders. And in that same article, it talked about what a big evolutionary puzzle actually menopause is.
Yeah.
Because most creatures breed until they die. That's, you know, the idea of Darwinian fitness is to have as many children as possible. So people have been confused why we go through menopause. So it talked about hunters and gatherers and speculated that probably the reason that menopause was selected in the Darwinian sense was for the same reason, that at around 50, women got so valuable to their communities, so valuable to their families, that it was better to have them stop, you know, stop being fertile and stop having children. And it was better to have them lead, you know, to care for their offspring, to care for their grandchildren, actually, but also to lead their communities. Mm. And so that was an idea that I really, really liked. You know what I mean?
Well, so can I just pause here for a second? Because
to go
back to what you said a second ago, that only human females and orca or experience
orca.
Menopause.
Right,
wow.
Right.
Okay. Okay. So that's...
I mean, now, I'll just say now they have, I mean, through, you know, when I started the book, that was the fact. Now they know that narwhals, beluga whales, and shortfin pilot whales also go through menopause.
Okay. So various species of whale and
of
dolphin.
Whales.
Dolphin being
exactly.
For the orcas. Okay. So, but you actually, you went to Washington State, right?
Yeah.
To actually see these orca in the water. Why did you do that? And what did that give you? What understanding did that give you about your own experience of menopause?
Well, I just got more and more obsessed with the whales. You know, once I learned this fact, I started to watch them on YouTube. And I'm lucky. There's a lot of whale watching. And also the Center for Whale Research has a lot of videos of whales on there. I got particularly fascinated with this whale, Granny, J2, who's a 104-year-old matriarch. She's the leader of KJ and LPOD. And eventually, I just couldn't help myself. You know, I was listening. You know, there's a LiveLink hydrophone actually out there. So I had that... I had that on my computer all the time. I was like listening to the whales and like I just was completely obsessed. So I flew to Seattle. I took the van up the coast. I went on the ferry 2 hours over and I eventually found myself in a sea kayak, you know, going out to see the whales. And unbelievably, I was lucky enough to see Granny, you know, the whale that I just admired and had grown to love and had grown to sort of who inspired me so much. And so it was just amazing to see them. just living their lives. I mean, I'll never forget when I saw Granny and she kind of came up out of the water right in front of the kayak. And she, actually, whales are identified by their dorsal fins. Mm-hmm. And she has a fairly big notch on her dorsal fin from a run in probably with a propeller, sometime earlier in her life, a boat propeller. And I remember she came up and I didn't know that it was Granny at first, but I saw her eye and she had a look of like, kind of wise, kind of weary, and a little bit of contempt. It was sort of a look of like,
you were
like,
in her space.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you doing? Why are you doing this, you know? Which I really love because there's so much, you know, kind of sentimental stuff about, you know, rich ladies and their elephants and how they love each other and all this stuff, you know what I mean? And it was so nice to just really see a wild creature and have a very honest, like, interaction with them. And as she came out of the water, the guide in back of me said, you know, it's Granny. I see the notch. And I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it just meant so much to me to see her. I'll never get over it. You know, it just was the most incredible experience.
Well, but so the connection there is what you were saying a minute ago about how postmenopausal orca are the matriarchal leaders of their pods, right?
Right.
But I guess what you're saying is that you don't feel at all that we humans treat each other in the same way. Is that true? Is that a particularly Western thing, or is it true across the board?
I mean, I found some, you know, in my studies, I found some cultures, you know, I didn't write about it much in the book, but I found a few cultures where menopausal women were honored. They were usually cultures where there was a lot of restrictions on women beforehand. Like, I know there was a place in Mexico where the daughters would take over the domestic duties, you know, after their mothers went into menopause.
Yeah. Well, you know what? When we come back from the break, I want to hear more about what you've discovered about historically how menopause has been viewed and more about why you want to change that. So Darcy Steinke joins us today. She's author of Flash Count Diary, Menopause and the Vindication of Natural Life. And we want to hear from you. What's your story about menopause and how we as a society view women who've gone through this chain? This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Darcy Steinke. She's author of the new book, Flash Count Diary, Menopause and the Vindication of Natural Life. And we want to hear from you. Have you experienced or are you experiencing menopause? What is that like for you? Were you prepared for it? And how is it that we as a culture view women who have gone through this major life change? And should we change that view? And Darcy, we've actually got some calls coming in here. So let me just go to one of them quickly. Louisa is calling from Winter Haven, Florida. Louisa, you're on the air.
Hey, I wanted to mention that as we are young girls going into our puberty, most of the times we have either our mothers or grandmothers or somebody that's going to guide us through that phase of our lives. But when we are approaching menopause, many times we do not have our mothers with us because they have passed or we are not living with them. And that, I think, helps create part of that mystery. We don't have much information about that. Mm. And on the other hand, I wanted to give some advice to women that are going to go or are going through menopause. Always have a fan with you.
Yeah.
Either like, you know, a hand fan or a battery operated fan, because that will make your life easier. And if you have a partner, have separate sheets and blankets in bed, because you will be taking them on and off all the time.
Louisa,
practical advice.
Yeah, thank you for the call and excellent pro tips there, actually. And to Lisa's, right. Louisa's point, I'm glad she shared those because, as she was saying, Darcy, maybe part of the challenge here is that women enter this phase of life and frequently they don't have that matrilineal advice to get. So talk to me about that.
I think that's true, but I think some, you know, women, I mean, some women's mothers may have passed, but I also think my mother had a lot of shame about menopause, and she wasn't interested in talking to me about it, you know. I mean, I can remember her being upset and being hot and being irritated, and I would ask her what was wrong, and she would just say nothing, you know. I mean, so I think there's also that. I mean, I actually think that the shame of being a menopausal woman and the ideas that the culture has lumped onto it, that we're over, you know, that we're hags, you know what I mean? That we're no longer viable women. I think it makes a lot of women want to hide and pretend that menopause doesn't exist, you know?
Can you talk to me more about that? Because I think this is really important. So first of all, about that shame question,
right.
And also just the extreme, you know, emotional surges that come with it. I mean, you talk in your book about comparing the force of menopausal rage to the transformative anger of the Incredible Hulk.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely got more in touch with my anger during my menopause, but I actually thought of it as a good thing. And I think this is the, you know, I think you need to, anger needs to be handled in a responsible way, of course. But, you know, women do get angry, you know what I mean? It's not like a medical problem, you know? And that really upsets me, too. I feel like, you know, when you're angry, you're either like, you know, a crazy menopausal person, a crazy ex-wife, a crazy ex-girlfriend. You know what I mean? Like, you're always, like, sort of lumped into a stereotype. You're not just, like, a person that's angry the way men are. So that really bothers me. I also just feel like there's sort of a vacuum, you know, when it comes to menopause. I mean, the reason I wanted to write, you know, Flash Count Diary is that I felt that there weren't enough stories, you know, nuanced stories of women, you know, actually going through this passage and how transformative and powerful it could really be. Mm. You know, there's a struggle, of course, but it's also, you know, incredibly powerful, you know, so.
Yeah. So, but it has, I mean, you explore sort of how menopause has been viewed over time. I mean, at least we're talking
right.
about it now. There were times in Western history where,
right, yeah.
you know, women going through menopause were seen as witches.
Yes, I write about that. I mean, I did a lot of research on, I went to the, actually there's a wonderful a library like in New York City. It's like a medical library. So I went through all the old books about menopause and I found some incredible, early menopause advice, like never eat sausages, particularly on a Sunday, sponge your body with vinegar every day, apply leeches to your anus, fast on milk, drink the bone marrow of recently killed animals, and get transfusions of dog's blood. So those were collected from a wide variety of supposedly, you know, medical books about menopause, you know. So that was kind of disheartening to think that. I mean, it's true we've improved, you know, no one's telling anybody to get like transfusions of dog's blood now. But, you know, we still have a long way to go to sort of normalize it. I mean, nobody tries to shut down puberty. You know, nobody tries to shut down birth, you know. But menopause is the only life stage that people kind of want to shut down, you know. And that's I'm sort of ambivalent about hormones. But I do think that the shutting down of menopause comes sometimes from the idea of just, you know, taking estrogen and then going back to a, you know, sort of chemically a more, you know, fertile life stage.
Yeah.
But then also I think just culturally, you know, less like, you know, pretending that you're not in it, just like, you know, keeping the, you know, physical attributes of somebody who's in the fertile stage,
right.
You know, as well. So I think I really think that we need to normalize it and make it like just a part of life, just like puberty, just like birth. It's just another female life stage. You know?
Well, we'll talk about hormone therapy in just a couple of minutes in more detail. But Darcy, I feel like part of the issue is that, as you were mentioning, puberty, pregnancy, these are all major events in most or many women's lives that signal sort of like your entrance into a new phase of womanhood, right? Right? And
yes,
but menopause
yes.
can be seen, or I guess might be popularly seen, as the opposite of that, right? It's your exiting from kind of one of the definitive aspects of womanhood. And
right.
compound that with our sort of youth-obsessed culture.
Yeah,
It makes a lot of sense as to why we see it as something that we don't want to talk about, don't want to experience, we don't want to have happen. It's the opposite of, like, you know, the matriarchal granny orcas.
Well, you know, it was really the whales that showed me, that it wasn't menopause that was the problem. It was menopause as it's experienced under patriarchy that was the problem. You know, that was the actual problem, you know? And so that was helpful to me, because I was thinking, like, is this really, like, the end and the worst thing in the world? You know what I mean? Or is this a gateway to a new phase that I just have to figure out, you know?
Well, the biological changes can be challenging to some women, and I do want to, I'm going to give voice to that in a second here, but we've got lots of comments coming in here. Nancy Hayes Pope says, Nancy says, I'm a hot and cold nightmare, but truly I don't suffer fools anymore. So there's that. But Nancy also says she wants her hormones back. Let's go to Catherine, who's calling from Dayton, Ohio. Catherine, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm so excited for this show today. I am 50, and at 48, I started to go through menopause. And for me, I have been so excited, and for every hot flash that I have, I own it, because I suffered from endometriosis for 35 years. And every time, and it, I... well, also infertile due to that, but have two beautiful boys through adoption. But, yeah, every time I have a hot flash, I am like, bring that on. so I wanted to make a point. I really do. I mean, it is uncomfortable, and I have some mood swings, but I don't know if it's due to that or just due to stress in life. But for me, it's sporadic. I'll go in cycles of a lot of hot flashes, and then I'll go where I'll go months without any. And I'm, like I said, I am definitely okay with that, and I rejoice in that. And I'm looking forward to hear what you all have to say about the hormone replacement.
Well,
I've chosen not to do that.
Okay, Catherine, thank you so much for your call. So this is a great opportunity for us to bring into the conversation Pauline Mackey. She joins us from Chicago. She's director of women's mental health research at the University of Illinois at Chicago. She's a professor of psychiatry and psychology and former president of the North American Menopause Society. Professor Mackey, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
So, first of all, I just wonder if we might start off with, if you could give us a basic explanation of biologically what happens in a woman's body as she goes through menopause.
Yes. So the menopause is a reproductive transition, much like puberty, except the inverse, as you were talking about before. The ovaries no longer are as functional as they had been throughout a woman's life, and the ovaries communicate with the brain in this very eloquent and highly choreographed dance where they send signals to one another. And as the ovaries begin to shut down, the estrogen signal that comes from the ovaries to the brain begins to disrupt that kind of dance, that communication. And so women begin to experience these dramatic increases, actually, and dramatic decreases in estrogen levels, unlike anything else that they'd experienced before. So while most people think about the menopause, specifically the perimenopause, the time around the menopause, is this gradual decrease in hormones, really what the body is experiencing are these very high fluctuations in levels of estradiol due to this choreographed dance no longer being so well choreographed.
I see. And so are there even once a woman gets through the hot flashes and the slow shutting down of the ovaries, as you're saying, but are there sort of longer term biological effects of losing that cycle, of that estrogen cycle?
Yes, well, most people think about estrogen in relation to reproduction and fertility. Estrogen receptors, that is the locks on different bodily systems, are found in the brain and the bone and the heart and the liver throughout the female body. So estrogen has been shown to play a key role in many things, Perhaps the most commonly recognized one is osteoporosis, which increases, of course, after the menopause. In addition, whereas premenopausally, women go from having a decreased risk of cardiovascular disease compared to men, after the menopause, they catch up. Mm. And these two examples show how estrogen is involved in many more things than we typically think of.
Well, let's go to Marcia briefly, who's calling from Buffalo, New York. Marcia, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm not sure. I'm a 60-year-old woman, and I remember at 12 years old, we went to a little class at school about getting our period. We went with our moms. And then, you know, we get older, and we don't really talk about it. So I went through menopause late, like 57. And I think women don't really discuss with their friends about what they're going through, hot flashes being the least of the things that we go through. I've been a pharmacist for 37 years, and I think that I was sort of shocked with the sexual problems that go along with menopause that no woman discusses with her friends or anybody else, because it's just sort of one of those things we don't talk about. And I think that's pretty serious. It's a pretty important part of people's lives. I've been married almost 40 years, and I'm really very proactive. What about women who aren't? It becomes a big problem.
Well, Marcia, thank you for raising that. Thank you for your call. Darcy, I hear you affirming what Marcia's saying.
Right. Right. No, I do think that there are sexual changes at menopause. There's the vaginal lining can thin. There can be less moisture. I mean, and there can be hormone treatments for that, you know, cream. But I also want to argue, and this was true, I interviewed about 100 women, and I'll include myself in this, that I think at menopause, I mean, my sexual script really changed. I mean, I was less interested in penetration. I was more interested in other sexual acts. You know, I realized there was a lot on the menu. And I actually think that's a part of menopause that people don't talk about, that I don't know whether it's midlife or hormonally. I mean, there may be ways that you were sexual that you might not want to be sexual anymore. I mean, you might want to do it the same way you've done, been doing it for years and years, but you might want to think about, doing the things that you actually feel like doing. You know, I think when we say sex, we really think about specifically penetration. And I worry about that because I know from speaking to my friends and the women that I spoke to, almost all of them were still interested in sex. People talk a lot about how in menopause, women lose their interest in sex. I think in menopause, some women do lose some of their interest in, in penetration because it can be painful. Mm. But they're still interested in sex. You know, they're still interested in lots of other things. And I think that's a thing that should be talked about as well as the idea that as a woman, you may need some support, when it comes to intercourse.
Right.
You know?
So yeah. Professor Mackey, jump in here. First of all, I think there's agreement with what Darcy and our caller was saying, that perhaps this is an aspect of menopause that isn't talked about enough. And I'd love to hear what you have to say about that. Plus the actual, again, like sort of the bodily effects on sexuality that the loss of estrogen has on women.
I think it's very important that women recognize that it's only a problem if they decide it's a problem. So in order for these changes to be something deserving of medical attention, it has to bother the woman. So the woman who doesn't want to deal with it doesn't need to, but the woman who does, can in fact choose from a variety of different solutions, from lubricants to local estrogens, and they do work. And, reproductive tissues are a site of many, many estrogen receptors. And when there is estrogen loss, the tissue in reproductive tissues changes. And that leads to painful sex, which can make women less interested in sex because it's not the pleasurable experience it used to be. Lubricants can help that, but it won't regenerate or sustain the tissue that's there. So it's almost a cosmetic way of treating that problem. But, many women are satisfied with that. And, Darcy's point really resonates. I think it's also an opportunity to explore new ways of expressing one's sexuality. But again, I think the big picture point is let's let women decide what they want and whether or not they're going to be bothered by these symptoms.
Yeah. So let me ask you, so we've been discussing menopause, as a process that many women arrive at a certain point in their life. But we should also include women who surgically, because, you know, whether it's hysterectomy or ovoectomies, have these organs removed. For them, it's very sudden. Right, Professor Mackey?
Yes, that's exactly right. And I'm so glad, Meghna, that you made that distinction. And it is important to distinguish between women who undergo surgical menopause through ovary removal earlier than the typical onset of menopause, which is about 51 years in the United States. And the reason for that is that estrogen does send signals to tissues throughout the body and helps to preserve functioning of the heart and the brain. And good longitudinal studies have shown that women who have their ovaries removed early really are at increased risk for a variety of different medical conditions, including cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's disease, cognitive problems. So generally, medical societies recommend that those women at least take estrogen until the typical age at menopause, unless that's contraindicated.
Well, Professor Pauline Mackey and Darcy Steinke, stand by for just a moment. We are talking about menopause. Darcy has written a new book called Flash Count Diary, Menopause and the Vindication of Natural Life. We'll get more information about hormone therapy when we come back. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Darcy Steinke. She's author of the new book, Flash Count Diary, Menopause and the Vindication of Natural Life. We have an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. Pauline Mackey also joins us. She's director of women's mental health research at the University of Illinois at Chicago, a professor of psychiatry and psychology, and former president of the North American Menopause Society. And let's just go to the phones quickly. Let's go to Amy, who's calling from Tampa, Florida. Amy, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to share that I am very fortunate, unlike some of your listeners, to have a group of friends where we are very open about these things. Mm. And if it hadn't been that way, I wouldn't have found out about estrogen and local application as opposed to pill form. Uh-huh. But I also just wanted to add something else that's just more fun. And that is that we've actually, my apologies to Mattel, created Barbies for menopausal women, like the Barbie that carries the fan around, or the Barbie that carries the tube of estrogen and the little pretend penis around. And I just wanted to share that with all of you.
Apologies to Mattel, definitely, but I think that's a terrific idea, Amy. Thank you so much for your call. Okay, so Professor Mackey, Amy's got a great support system there, and also a creative one, I have to say. But we do have a lot of questions coming in about hormone replacement therapy, because there is a lot of confusion about it, Professor Mackey. So what's the latest science or medical understanding of whether or not women should do hormone replacement after menopause?
Yes, there's so much confusion and misinformation about hormone therapy. So I appreciate the question. First of all, what I might recommend that women do is that they go to find information that's evidence-based. There's a nonprofit organization, the North American Menopause Society, at menopause.org, which has excellent information for women. So I recommend that. How we know what we know about hormone therapy comes from randomized trials where some women take hormones and other women take placebo, and we look at all kinds of medical endpoints. We look at hot flashes. Hormone therapy takes away about 95% of hot flashes. It's the most effective treatment. So for women who are bothered by hot flashes, it's a great treatment, and it's also FDA approved for osteoporosis prevention, which is great. So those are the two indications. Most women want to know, is it safe? Mm-hmm. And the confusion about that came from the Women's Health Initiative, which was the largest randomized trial of hormone therapy. And resulting from that trial is something that a woman will see on her hormone therapy insert, which is the black box warning that hormone therapy will cause cardiovascular disease, breast cancer, dementia, etc. So it turns out that those warnings really fall into the category of, well, it depends. So a large consensus group of medical societies, which also include the investigators of the study that led to that black box warning, which I think is important, have concluded that really for women without contraindications, that is, women who don't have breast cancer or aren't at increased risk for stroke, and who are between the ages of 50 and 60, for those women, the women who are the most symptomatic as well, the benefits of hormone therapy outweigh the risks of hormone therapy. And in other words, it's age dependent.
Okay, so I was just going to say, and after 60?
And after 60, you know, it's a critical question because we now recognize that as many as 20% of women continue to have moderate to severe hot flashes for more than 10 years after their final menstrual period. So this is a really important question for many women whose lives are disrupted by hot flashes and those women who want to, you know, take that away. It turns out the risks do increase, and that's where we become concerned about the estrogen plus progesterone. So a woman takes progesterone to protect the uterus from cancer. That combination does lead to what is known as a rare increased risk of breast cancer and as well cardiovascular disease. But we're now realizing that there are safer formulations of hormone therapy, formulations that aren't, for example, associated with the increased risk of stroke. And those are the estrogen formulations that come through a patch. Mm-hmm. So many providers recommend that women use a patch form of hormone therapy, also called a transdermal form of hormone therapy, if that's the route that they want to go. Yeah. There are many options. And for good information, you have to go to a provider who knows this. And right. Unfortunately, we didn't train a whole generation of providers on menopause medicine. So it's tough.
Yeah. Well, Darcy, I mean, walk us through your decision-making process, because you don't take hormone therapy.
No, I don't. I decided against it. And I you know, I really respect Dr. Mackey a lot. She was my favorite, like, of all the doctors and scientists that I talked to for my book, actually. I don't know. I feel ambivalent about this because I feel like, you know, I talked to some of the WHI doctors who still were sort of worried about hormone therapy in a more aggressive way. And I also found a lot of doctors and some breast cancer surgeons who also were very, you know, still kind of very worried about hormones. So I feel mixed on it. You know, I also feel mixed on the fact that, you know, some of these drug companies fund some of these tests and give money to colleges where these professors work and all this. So I feel like there's a little bit of I worry about this a lot, this idea that, like, it's true that it's scientific information, but how kind of clean is it? You know, that worries me a lot. For my own self, my mother had breast cancer, and I just knew that for me, I would be too anxious on, you know, hormones. I saw her have a mastectomy. It was a really painful experience for me. She had actually been on hormones, you know, so I just knew that for me, I would be too anxious. I mean, even if and I think it's completely true. I do think that from what I've read, hormones have been linked to both breast cancer and heart disease, but the percentages are extremely low and the chance is slight, right? So I knew that. And I, you know, but I just knew that for my own anxiety level, I just could not do it. You know? And there's another part of it, actually, which is I don't know if it needs to be medicated. You know, I think, you know, hot flashes are really terrible and they are disturbing. And I had them while I was teaching. I had them all the time, you know. But I also felt like it was sort of like, you know, it's sort of like going to graduate school to become a doctor. You know what I mean? It was like a thing I had to move through, right? That I was, you know, some things that weren't necessary were kind of burning off me, right? And it was a thing I had to move through to become my next self. You know?
So Darcy, can I just take it back from you? Because this is exactly the point that I wanted to ask Professor Mackey. Because, Professor, I heard all you said about where the current sort of state of the science is around who might benefit or who might be at risk if taking hormone therapy. But more broadly speaking, this idea that Darcy's raising about, you know, if we're going to honestly address menopause as a natural part of a woman's life, perhaps it's not something that needs medication at all. I just wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, and didn't her book illustrate that perspective beautifully? I think it is important to respect each woman's individual decision about this process. And if she eschews, you know, hormone therapy because she wants to experience this in a transformative manner, I deeply respect that, even more after reading Darcy's fantastic book. But on the other hand, there are women who suffer from these moderate to severe hot flashes. You know, we measure hot flashes objectively in my research studies, and we have had women who have 47 hot flashes a day.
Wow.
And, you know, night after night of disrupted sleep, and we know how important sleep is to our mental well-being, to our cardiovascular system. It's now being linked to Alzheimer's disease. And so I think it's very important that we let women define for themselves what's disruptive and whether or not they want to treat it. And if they do want to treat it, it's important to get sound medical advice.
Yeah. Well, look,
yeah, I agree with that.
Darcy, I'm going to just jump in here because we're running down on time and we have a lot of
callers. It's a personal choice. I completely agree with that. Yeah.
Well, we have a ton of callers. So let's hear from some of the people who are thinking about this and going through this. So let's go to Chris, who's calling from Freeport, Maine. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am 55. I went through menopause at 51, pretty common. I had hot flashes prior during the perimenopause stage, but really after menopause, nothing. So I did no hormone replacement therapy, very happy with that. It's all been a breeze. I'm a very active woman. I ski, I snowshoe, I hike, and I was on Friday diagnosed with osteoporosis, and I'm just blindsided by it. You know, I'm waiting to go to see another doctor. I had a really wonderful GYN who just sort of suggested I have a bone density test, and I did. And again, like I say, diagnosed with osteoporosis in my back, and now, you know, I'm sort of wondering what's next.
Yeah.
What are they going to suggest I do? And am I going to be able to ski? And, you know.
Well, let me give Professor Mackey a chance to respond. Chris, thank you for your call. What would you say to Chris, Professor Mackey?
Yeah, so Chris's example is a good illustration of how estrogen signals to other bodily tissues, including bone, right? So osteoporosis does increase after the menopause, and there are a variety of different treatments for it, most commonly probably the bisphosphonates rather than hormone therapy. So one's provider might give hormone therapy for osteoporosis in a woman who's highly symptomatic with hot flashes, but not as often for women who have osteoporosis without menopausal symptoms. In that case, they'll go to a different class of medications. And there's lots of good options for her. I love that she's dealing with this now, early in her postmenopausal years, because she will build that bone back and prevent, you know, the more catastrophic effects that can happen when women fall.
Well, it is wonderfully hopeful to hear you say that it's possible. It may be possible for Chris to build that bone back. So let's go to Juan, who's calling from Richmond, Virginia. Juan, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Very happy to hear this program. And my question for you is, I am a male. And my wife sooner will be into this process. So my question is, how can I be a better partner for her during this process? Thank you.
Juan, I really appreciate that question.
That's amazing. Yeah. I love that.
Darcy,
I
mean, what do you say?
Well, this is part of the reason I wrote the book is I feel like, you know, I'll tell you what my husband does. You know, when I have a hot flash, he goes to the refrigerator, he gets out the cold pack, you know, he lets me put it on my lap or on my arm or my head. You know, he never makes fun of me if I'm having a hot flash. You know, I feel like, you know, I mean, people don't make fun of people that are having seizures. Like, you know what I mean? I mean, I just think it's crazy that that hot flashes have become this humorous thing. It really upsets me. And I think part of the reason I wrote the book is I want more discussion, more understanding. I mean, I think just to ask her how she's feeling, you know, and be there and not be like dismissive and that it's nothing or it's a pain, that it's like it's a real struggle for her. So, you know, be there with her. You know, and I think it's so amazing that you called. I just love it.
Professor Mackey, what do you say?
Yeah, I think for couples, one of the very concrete decision-making processes is around how many covers to have on the bed, because women and men have different tolerances for external heat. So, you know, prepare that way. Get a couple of different blankets.
Yeah,
and But I agree. I think it's just beautiful that you are interested in helping her through it, and keeping an open mind without judgment is a great place to start.
And I feel like with all of these sort of transitional moments in our lives with our partners and loved ones, communication is one of the things that helps smooth the way forward. Let's see if we can sneak in at least one or two more calls in here. Joy is calling from Enfield, New Hampshire. Joy, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was diagnosed with breast cancer, estrogen-positive breast cancer, at age 35, which was a catalyst for menopause. And I had chemotherapy, which then put me into perimenopause, and I ended up with a hysterectomy at 45 for a lot of other reasons. Mm-hmm. But during that time, I found that I can't take hormone replacement because of my estrogen-positive breast cancer, and I found that there just weren't a lot of resources for women going through that particular situation.
Yeah.
And there were actually quite a few women I knew in their 30s with a breast cancer diagnosis. So I would love to hear your guest's response.
Yeah. Joy, thank you for your call. And Professor Mackey, we've just got about 2 minutes left, and I'll start with you here. So you go ahead and respond to Joy. But also, I think one of the things we're coming away with from this hour is, where should women go in general for good information about menopause when it comes to them?
Yeah, Joy, again, as before, I would direct you to menopause.org, the nonprofit associated with the North American Menopause Society. I was fortunate to be a part of an expert review panel who systematically reviewed and quantified the literature, scientific literature, on what are non-hormonal therapies and which are effective. And the good news is there are effective non-hormonal therapies that women can use, even including things like cognitive behavior therapy. So for information, I would go to menopause.org, and women with a history of breast cancer do have these symptoms, and they're typically worse than women without that history. So your question is so well motivated, and I wish you the best.
And Darcy, you've got about a minute left. Do you have a last thought to share with folks about your journey and understanding sort of cultural and social and biological forces and how we think about menopause?
Well, I always remember, I was struggling, still in menopause, when I had heard about the whales already. And I remember my husband came to my bed and said, "When you go away from the whales, you don't do so well. But when you stay with the whales, you do a lot better," you know? So I think the idea of finding things that inspire you, we're in a culture that really beats us down as menopausal women. So finding whether it's creatures, whether it's animals, whether it's books you like, whether it's people, writers that you like, painters, artists like, athletes, that are going through the same thing or have gone through the same thing. I think it's important to find models that can help you and inspire you. That's a big thing, I think.
Well, Darcy Steinke, author of the new book, Flash Count Diary, Menopause and the Vindication of Natural Life. We have an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. Darcy, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Pauline Mackey, Director of Women's Mental Health Research at the University of Illinois at Chicago, a professor of psychiatry and psychology, and former president of the North American Menopause Society. Professor Mackey, it was a great pleasure to have you and your expertise with us this hour. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.